At SummerSlam, we had an Intercontinental title match between Bron Breakker and Sami Zayn. And unfortunately, that match was disappointing in that it only went 5 minutes. Now, apparently they were supposed to have more time. I don't know why they didn't. I don't know. I guess their time got cut, whatever it was. But they had a 5-minute match at SummerSlam. Well, tonight they got more than 3 times that amount of time in the main event to go out there. 2 out of 3 falls for the Intercontinental Championship, and they made the most of it, even though the commercials savaged it, as they do every week. But they went out there, and I thought they had a hot main event to close out another very good episode of Raw. Not as great as last week, but I thought that it was a nice follow-up with a hot main event. We had another great Bronson Reed segment with Bronson Reed murdering another member of the roster, which is fine with me. He can do that every week. He can go on to do that every single week, and I would be perfectly fine with it. Hey, Silver Tower. Silver Tower, 10 gifted memberships just now. Look at this. Look at the sea of green that we have in the chat. Silver Tower, where the hell have you been? He's been on a cruise around the world. I haven't heard from him in a while. Yes. Yes. So Bronson Reed going out there killing dudes. Not Wyatt 6 level of murder. We're not talking that level of murder. But murdering another babyface on the roster. And I thought a lot of the follow-up to a lot of the other mid-card stories on the show, mid and upper card, a lot of the follow-up was solid. Speaking of the Wyatt 6, no Wyatt 6 match, no Wyatt 6 appearance on the show tonight. We had another little VHS tape. I actually think it's smart. You don't want to overexpose them. That is an act that needs to be kept special. And the way that you do that is not by just throwing them out there in a random match every single week. So last week they had their big debut in the main event. I thought that they pretty much hit a home run as they had to with it. I thought that, you know, they looked good. The crowd reacted well to it. And until you have another big match or a big angle involved, it's okay to keep them off the show. Now, I would expect them to make some kind of appearance next week. So we'll see if we get them on next Monday show. But they did not appear tonight. We also know what kind of a match CM Punk and Drew McIntyre are going to have, are likely to have, in Berlin. And speaking of Berlin, that mixed tag team match that I talked about last week just became a reality because we found out that the Judgment Day, they will collide. The Judgment Day of old against the Judgment Day of today, the new Judgment Day, which apparently may have a new name soon. And you will not believe what this new name is. I will talk about that later. Let's get into it. This is your Monday Night Raw review. It is August 12th, 2024. I am the Sala Monster. Like and subscribe. As you could tell from the beginning of this stream, Super Chats are open. So if you would like to drop one, I don't know if Bobbert can be topped, but by all means, your support is always appreciated. I will read your messages a little bit later on here in the stream, so get them on in. Now, start with Rhea Ripley. I mentioned the Judgment Day. Let's start there, because she opened tonight's show, and she had a little something to say. She said that she's had a lot of time to think about what happened at SummerSlam. She felt a lot of emotion. She felt embarrassment. She felt heartbreak. Now the main feeling is that she is pissed the hell off. And she said Dominik stabbed her in the back, and then she added that she was going to say something that he has probably heard before and said that it just wasn't deep enough. Well then, talk about putting it all out there. Looks like Dominik is coming up a little bit short. So saith Rhea Ripley. So then Dominik and Liv Morgan interrupted. They were up in the crowd, probably, I would say, the 100 level section. They were standing up there. And Dom said that he's a man. He deserves to be treated like one. Well, evidently, based on what Rhea Ripley just said, not much of one. But he said he's a man. And he deserves to be treated like one. He said Rhea tried to change him rather than letting him be himself. And he said that it was embarrassing to be bossed around and being a grown man referring to her as his mommy. Said that he has a woman now who calls him daddy, a woman who lets him eat chicken tenders, a woman who lets him play video games. It's really all you need. Find yourself a woman who will let you eat chicken tenders and play video games to your heart's content. That is a woman worth keeping. Now we know why. Now we know why Dominic traded Rhea Ripley for Liv Morgan. It all comes down to the video games. If she would have just let him play Call of Duty and left him alone, Rhea Ripley would be the world champion right now. But she didn't, and now we see the end result. Liv Morgan is the champion, Rhea Ripley is not. You know why? Because she did not let him play video games. There's a lesson in there. There's a lesson to be learned. So all of you out there right now, you can hear your moms upstairs yelling, turn that video game off. What can I say? Mom's not going to let you play video games, so there's only one thing left to do. You got to stab mom in the back. That's it. That's it. Follow Dominic's lead. Trade up. Find somebody else. It's the only way. The other reason is also he said that Liv did something that Rhea could never do. She helped him finally beat his deadbeat dad. So Ripley said that, you know what? I'm actually proud of Dom. She's proud of everything that Dom has accomplished over the last couple of years. She said that Dominic has grown into the man he is today. It's one of her greatest accomplishments. And she said that Dominic finally did something for himself and won gold. She said that she wanted Dominic to beat his father on his own so that there would be no excuses that Dominic was in fact better than Rey Mysterio. Ripley said that she should probably be proud of Dom for making his own decisions, but it will be the last one that he ever makes. Now, Liv Morgan said that Dominic is all hers. She said Ripley has no family. Her real family is a million miles away. And she took away her adopted family. She took Dominic and she took the women's world title. Everything you loved is mine. Sounds like a woman in a divorce. Everything you love and everything you own is now mine. Ripley said that Morgan has taken a lot from her, but not everything. She said Liv took a lot of her weak links, but the mistake that she made was leaving her standing. Ripley said that she would be coming for Liv, and Liv is going to have to kill her to stop her. She also said Liv loves the sound of her own voice, which made it easy for us, to find out where she and Dominic were. And they both look confused. Liv didn't quite know what she meant by that. But then we see Damian Priest walks up behind them. And it takes them a few seconds. They don't realize it right away that Priest is standing behind them. They turn at the exact same time and they see him. He grabbed Dominic and threw him into a wall. Liv ran away down the stairs to get away from them. So they fought into a bar area out on the concourse inside. Liv jumps on the back of Damian Priest. He's still throwing bombs. He's fighting with her on his back. Here comes Rhea Ripley, and she chases Liv through one of the exit doors. Meanwhile, Priest kicks Dom's ass all the way back down the stairs in the arena, down to ringside, and into the ring, where Carlito attacks Damian Priest from behind. Michael Cole points out that Priest's opponent tonight would be Carlito, and Priest quickly clears him from the ring, and that takes us into our first commercial break. So I thought that this was a fun little segment, fun little open to the show here. And like I said, at the end of the day, it all comes down to letting the boy play his video games. That's what it comes down to ultimately. And she and Priest right now are super over. We saw it last week in the segment where they cleared all the members of the Judgment Day out of the ring. Finn Balor just, you know, barely got away. So we saw it last week, and we saw it again here in this segment, you know, with the Terror Twins here. And I said last week, you know, this has to be leading to a mixed tag team match, and it is in fact official. At Bash in Berlin on the 31st, it will be Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest taking on Dominic Mysterio and Liv Morgan. And that was the match that made the most sense. Rhea Ripley should not win the Women's World Championship back at least until Bad Blood. And if we could even find a way to extend that out a little bit, that would be even better. Yeah, because they have a good thing going right now with this angle. And I still feel like it would be premature to take that title off of Liv Morgan. But I say this here on August 12. Bad Blood is October 5th. By the time we get to Bad Blood, it might be time to switch the belt back to Rhea. But so far, so good. Yeah, the angle is working. Dom and Liv are getting great heat. And Rhea and Priest are super over, even though they are now out of the Judgment Day. So I thought this was a good segment. We had Damian Priest against Carlito. They stayed out there. Carlito, for whatever reason, was wearing one black boot and one white boot. They had a perfectly, what I would describe as a perfectly run-of-the-mill match that ended with Priest dropping him with a South of Heaven chokeslam and pinning him about 10 minutes in. Priest went face-first into the ropes and then spun around and dropped Carlito with a clothesline. Priest followed up with the South of Heaven, like I said, and got the pin. JD McDonagh attacked Priest as soon as the match was over. Then Finn Balor, Dominic Mysterio came out. They joined in the attack. Liv Morgan just watched. Rhea Ripley made her entrance, and Balor was the only heel left in the ring. So he was sandwiched in between Priest and Rhea. He had no place to go. And it was JD McDonagh who took the bullet for him. When Priest threw a kick, he ended up kicking McDonagh in the head instead, and Balor escaped for now. Priest and Ripley hugged, and as they hugged, Dominic came flying off the top rope. He thought that he would catch them, but instead, Priest is the one who caught him throat first. He goozled him, and he ended up sending him into Rhea Ripley, who set Dominic up for her riptide finish, and boy, people were ready for this. They were ready and waiting. They wanted to see him take the riptide. She got him up for it. They were close to the ropes, and that allowed Liv Morgan to reach up and pull Dominic over the top rope to safety. So there it is. There it is. People are dying to see her hit that riptide on Dominic. It doesn't necessarily have to come in a one-on-one match, although again, I will reiterate that I think Rhea against Dom one-on-one is something they should do. But we're going to get a version of it, even though legally they won't be allowed in the ring at the same time in a mixed tag. But we are going to get the mixed tag in Berlin. And I'm not even sure we'll get the riptide in Berlin. That's something they could also try to kind of build to and hold off on. But when she finally hits it, those people are going to go nutty for it. Otis, Tozawa, and Maxine Dupree, they were backstage when Ivy Nile walked up to Maxine and asked if she could talk to her. And Ivy told Maxine that she didn't think that she should be at ringside tonight for the Tornado Tag Team match between the Alpha Academy and the Creed Brothers. Maxine said that she had to. And so Ivy said, well, maybe you want to join us. Maybe you want to join up with our new crew. Maxine refused. She said she's not leaving her family. And Ivy said, I thought you might say that. And she walked off. Angle alert. That right there should have been a sign of what was to come for poor Maxine Dupree. We got a Wyatt 6 VHS video. This time it was back to Bo Dallas. He said everything was coming full circle. It's been heavy lately with lots of emotions. The Wyatt 6, they debuted in Baltimore last week, the place where it all began with the original Wyatt family. And he, being Bray, was there in spirit. Something big is happening, but the work isn't done. And then you could hear Uncle Howdy's voice saying, other doors shall be opened. The work must continue. And Bo then repeated the phrase, my life for you, my life for you, over and over again, each time his voice getting louder and louder and louder as they spliced in shots of Uncle Howdy, who ended it by saying, there you are. Very interesting that we have Bo Dallas here talking about other doors shall be open. I hear that. I think maybe there will be a sixth member of the Wyatt Six. Maybe we are getting the return soon of Alexa Bliss, and Alexa Bliss will be a part of the Wyatt Six. What other doors being opened would they be referring to? That was my first thought. So Bliss fan, if you are with us tonight, I believe he is. If you are with us tonight, you should be very excited because I think you may be onto something here. I think we may be getting the return of Alexa Bliss sooner than later. We had Odyssey Jones, along with The New Day, against Vincent Whiney out of the WWE Performance Center, we were told. Whiney. So he's a wrestling fan, I see. He didn't last long. Jones put him down with a spinning boss man slam. Karrion Kross walked out on stage with the rest of the Final Testament after the match. Kross brought up Kofi Kingston, Well, the idea that Kofi Kingston was trying to replace Big E in the New Day with Odyssey Jones, but then he warned Xavier Woods that what he was really trying to say, what Kofi was really trying to do, wasn't really replacing Big E. He's trying to replace Woods in the New Day. So Woods asked if Cross was ever tired of doing this every week. He was about to challenge them, or one of them, probably Cross, to a singles match. Kofi cut him off. Kofi took the microphone out of his hand in mid-sentence, wouldn't even let him finish his thought. And Kofi proceeded to issue a challenge to the final testicle. His word. To a six-man tag next week with Odyssey Jones joining him and Xavier Woods. And Cross accepted. And Xavier Woods did not seem very happy at all. He seemed rather annoyed at how this all went down. The hints are all there. They're laying them out for you. The split is being teased. The split, I think, is coming. What do they do next week? Do they have Xavier Woods eat the pin, take the loss for his team? And then he's, you know, very unhappy about the fact that he lost and feels like he's the weak link of the team. Because, look, the final testicle, they could use a win. And if that's how they get a win, by just using it as a way to further the story between Woods and Kofi, hey, a win is a win, right? I mean, the testicle could use one. So maybe it'll work out that way. But like I said last week, I had not cared at all. It was very difficult for me to bring myself to care about any of this New Day Final Testament stuff. Until last week, bringing in Odyssey Jones, looking at Xavier Woods' face, his mannerisms, his reaction to it, you could tell something was off. You saw it again here tonight. Now I'm invested. Now I actually have an interest in seeing how this New Day story is going to play out, how Odyssey Jones is going to factor into it. You know, it's been a long time that they have been teasing him coming to Monday Night Raw. Now he's here. And you could already see him starting to get over. Again, he's a very outgoing, very charismatic guy. He's a big guy who can do some impressive stuff in the ring. It won't be hard for him to get over. And you could already see it happening. But the New Day is so stale, right? Not to say that people don't like them. People like them. People like them. But they like them in the way that, you know, you have an old pair of socks. You've had that pair of socks for 10 years. It's got a couple of holes in it, but it fits. It's comfortable. You like it, right? That's what the New Day is right now. That's basically where they are now. People are comfortable when they see them, and they give them the respectful reaction when they come out, but they don't go gaga for them like they used to because they've been around for so long. So it's okay to shake things up a little bit and have Xavier Woods break away and feel like, you know what, I need my space, because you could always build to the reunion. And I would be very curious to see when that time comes, if they bring Big E back to TV to try to bring the family back together. But first, the family has to split. That hasn't happened yet. I hope it does, because I think that's just what the New Day needs. Adam Pearce was on his phone in his office saying that he wanted to make something official by the end of the night. Drew McIntyre walked in. And Pierce told him that CM Punk was not in the building. He had travel issues. McIntyre said that he didn't care about Punk anymore. I don't care about Punk. Why would you think I would care about Punk? He said this as he held up his arm, his wrist, and you could see the bracelet on his wrist. So he says, look, I already beat him. I beat the guy. It's time for me to move on to bigger and better things. And he took issue with a SmackDown star in Randy Orton coming to Raw to challenge for the World Heavyweight Championship. Said Orton got screwed 3 months ago and then sat around like a snake waiting for the opportunity, the right opportunity to strike. Said Orton got screwed once. I got screwed, he said, over and over and over again. He said, look, I'm going to take care of this. And Adam Pearce said the last time somebody said they were going to go take care of something, Bronson Reed killed Seth Rollins. And McIntyre said, look, I'm going to be on my best behavior, scout's honor. And he walked off. Otis and Tozawa, they entered for their match with Maxine. Obafemi was in the front row with his NXT North American Championship. And when Otis was about to get into the ring, he had a little stare down with Oba, because Oba has an open challenge for the NXT North American title tomorrow night. It was Otis and Tozawa against the Creed Brothers Tornado Rules tag team match. No Chad Gable on the show tonight. Chad Gable flew to Paris for the Olympics. I believe he was there with his dad. I know I saw him post a photo on his Instagram page with someone who I assume was his father. So he legitimately did go over there to the Olympics. He's still there. So he sent a video in instead as he was walking outside in Paris somewhere. Said he was there to watch some gold medal matches, but also do some scouting. But he's got unfinished business back home with the Wyatt Six when he gets back. Early in this match, Julius Creed, he already had a wrap on his arm. Julius Creed got his arm cut open or you know, sliced open somehow. And I didn't see how it happened, so I rewound and went back to go see if I can pinpoint it. There's a moment very early in the match where he chop blocks Otis. And it was after the chop block that I noticed there was blood on his hand. So it must have happened on the chop block spot. Maybe Otis stepped on his hand, you know, by accident. Something, you know, could have been a freak thing that happened. I just couldn't find anything beyond that that would have caused an injury where, I mean, he had a lot of blood on his hand. You could see it under the tape. And by the end of the match, it was like dripping off of his hand. So he'll probably need stitches, whatever it was. There was a moment here where Tozawa went for a suicide dive and he got his feet caught in the or on the middle rope as he was flying out of the ring, which is always scary because that happens sometimes and it's very scary when it does. I've seen that happen in a couple of women's matches. There was one woman's match in particular with one Brie Bella. I believe that happened to Brie once and she took a header on the floor outside. And that's nearly what happened here to Tozawa. He landed awkwardly, but it was safe. It's not like he came down straight on his head, but it was a scary moment. He was fine, other than maybe a bruised ego. In the ring, Julius got Otis up on his shoulders for Brutus to do something from the ropes, but instead Otis reached up and grabbed Brutus, got him in a suplex position, and ended up suplexing him as part of a Tower of Doom spot. Now, Otis, when he fell backwards off of Julius's shoulders. I mean, he fell backwards and landed, like almost folded up, right on the back of his neck. And so now he's laying there. Tozawa, as soon as they land, Tozawa immediately comes leaping off the top rope, his giant flying senton, and his legs hit Otis on the way down. They caught Otis. And I'm just like, poor Otis, this guy's taking a beating here. So all four men were down. We got a reset. At which point, Ivy Nile shows up outside the ring, right in front of the announcers, and attacks Maxxine Dupri from behind. I mean, you had to see this coming after the previous segment in the back. So she slams Maxine's face on the announce desk, then got her on top of the desk and locked in a dragon sleeper on top of the announce desk. Otis sees this from the ring, and he goes to leave the ring to go help her. As he's doing that, he gets knocked out of the ring to the floor by the Creeds. And Tozawa gets rolled up by Brutus with a little assist from Julius to put a little extra pressure. So they stacked him up, and they pinned Tozawa to win the match. This was not always the prettiest match, but this was, I thought it was a fun match. And the crowd got into it in those closing minutes. I think they even gave it a "This is awesome" chant at one point, which, yeah, you don't hear that too many times during an Alpha Academy match. So the people got into it. I got into it, you know, the later it went. And the thing with Alpha Academy is like the perfect middle of the card act. They really are. On this show, they are the perfect mid-card act. And the reason it works and the reason that you hear people responding in the way that they did tonight and on most weeks is because, you know, Triple H, he took the time to really develop those characters. Even in the slow weeks, a segment that you might look at and go, "Eh, that was a nothing segment, it was meaningless." In the end, it meant something because they were building these characters up. Tozawa was a comedy character and largely still is, but he was a comedy character, right? There was no depth. He would come out every now and then, you'd see him, the 24/7 title. There was no depth to any of that stuff. It was lazy bullshit. But with Tozawa, with Maxine, the stuff with Chad Gable and Otis, all those many months of segments with Gable browbeating them over and over and over again, it built those characters up enough to where the people could invest in them and like them and want to see them. And when they see them, they want to cheer them. And when somebody screws them over or attacks them, they boo because they like these people. That's called character development. And that's why you see the Alpha Academy when they go out there. Otis, when he goes out there, getting the kind of reactions they do. So they've done a very good job with that to give people a reason to actually care about these guys. As for Ivy Nile, I'm all in favor of the heel turn. I was wondering when the time came for them to turn the Creeds and to align them with Chad Gable if they would keep Ivy with them. And I'm glad they did, because she was, I mean, she was dead in the water as a babyface, right? Nothing going on. As a heel, she'll have a chance. And it's better for her to be part of this group anyway. Better for her to be a part of a group. So I'm glad that they turned her and they're keeping her with the Creeds. They aired a pre-taped Jackie Redmond interview with Pete Dunne from the stands earlier today that they filmed in the empty arena. She asked him about his issues with Sheamus, and Dunne said that Sheamus never took him under his wing. Dunne said that Sheamus was under his wing. He accused Sheamus of holding him down and said that all he got out of it was a terrible nickname and a front row seat for the Sheamus show. And Dunne questioned the idea of Sheamus caring about the Brawling Brutes. Case in point, he asked where Ridge Holland is right now. Well, last I knew, Ridge Holland was in NXT, so you tell me if I'm wrong about that. I think he's still down there. I haven't heard that they've cut bait on him. So he made that point. Jackie brought up the name Butch. Why? Why would you do that? Brings up Butch. Dunne tells her, don't ever say that name. Says, he had to swallow his pride for 2 years and let Sheamus little brother him. Dunne said that he's not Butch. He's the Bruiserweight. He's an 18-year veteran. He said that he will shut up Sheamus so he never has to hear that Butch name ever again. So basically, what they want you to do is now they want you to chant Butch at Pete Dunne whenever you see him. Whenever he comes out on this show, they want the crowd in unison to chant Butch at him. They call him Butch. Okada calls people bitch. I don't like it. I wish they would leave the Butch stuff in the past. I understand why they're doing it. I get it. They want to give the people something to chant when he comes out and have him react to it. Like, he doesn't want to hear it. Stop doing that, right? Because it gets under his skin. And that way the people will do it even louder. And they'll do it even more. Because any reaction is better than no reaction at all. The worst reaction that you can get is apathy. The worst reaction you could get is people sitting on their hands and not caring. And the fact is, you and I both know that Pete Dunne is a great wrestler. And he can be a great heel. Because we've seen it many years ago in the past. But the people aren't reacting to him, right? Now, we don't see him on Raw in a lot of singles matches since he turned heel. So, you know, maybe that's not universally true. But if they want to assure people that he will get a reaction, it's the easiest and cheapest way to do it, right? You tell people, oh, hey, this guy used to be known as Butch, and he really doesn't like it. So it gets a reaction. So I don't like it, but I understand why they're doing it, and we'll see how it plays out, because next week he's getting his match on Raw, one-on-one with Sheamus. That's coming up next week. They replayed the 6 tsunami splashes that Bronson Reed gave to Seth Franklin Rollins last week in that tremendous angle, my favorite part of the show last week. Michael Cole and Pat McAfee claimed that it was 10,000 pounds of total impact, and McAfee got cute with it and said that that's the weight of 2 small elephants, 10 boars, and 50 kangaroos. Great. What am I supposed to do with this information? Am I supposed to be impressed by this? Backstage, Adam Pearce told Bronson Reed that he was lucky he was only fined. He was fined once, and then he referred to Adam Pearce on Twitter as a stooge. And so Adam Pearce fined him for a second time. Reed said that he wasn't given an opportunity, so he had to make an impact. He said he would give Pierce a second chance and told him to find him an opponent tonight or he would go find his next victim. If you missed it, for those who are out of the loop here, the angle they did on TV last week was done to take Seth Rollins off of television for a while. He's banged up. He's medically cleared, but he's banged up. And so they're going to give him some time off. And it's a weird thing because we had not seen him since WrestleMania. And then a few weeks before Money in the Bank, he returned. And he got a world championship match with Damian Priest at Money in the Bank. Looked fine in the match. Has looked fine ever since coming out on TV. But he's literally had one match. He hasn't even worked house shows. So if he came back and he wrestled at Money in the Bank, he did the referee spot at SummerSlam. Didn't do a lot physically, obviously, in that match. And he's so banged up that he needs time off. That tells me that he was never fully 100% recovered to begin with. Because he's literally worked one match since coming back. So whatever it is, if it really is just, you know, whatever, wear and tear, he's banged up, he'll be back in a few weeks, then fine. It's just weird. He just came back not that long ago. And now he's out again. But if he's got to be out, that's a hell of a way to put somebody out. And it puts a ton of heat now on Bronson Reed. And I just loved that angle last week. I loved everything about it. The announcers, just the way that they played it up and all the mayhem and the carnage. It was great. It's the best part of Raw last week. But not knowing when Rollins is going to be back, I don't suspect it's going to be a long time, but I can't see them doing a match in Berlin because, I mean, what's the point? I mean, you tell people that he's got broken ribs, he's got internal injuries. He can't be back on TV in 2 weeks from that. So Berlin looks to be out the window. They don't have a PLE in September. The only one in September is All Out. That's it. WWE does not have a PLE in September. The next one would be Bad Blood, which is the beginning of October, and that would seem like the right place for it because this is a match that should be on a big event like that. This should not just be headlining a Monday Night Raw. So as of right now, it looks like we're not going to get Rollins and Reed probably until the beginning of October. So they got to keep Bronson Reed fresh. They have to keep him coming out here every week, fucking shit up, to put it bluntly. And leaving just a path of carnage in his wake, wherever like a tsunami, wherever he goes. They took some steps towards that tonight, later on in the show, which we'll get to. We had a damage control promo that aired with Io Sky and Kairi Sane. They spoke mostly in Japanese with subtitles. Io said that they are still the most dominant force in the women's division and would regain... Well, what does that say about the women's division? And they would regain the tag team titles. Kairi said that Sonya Deville, Shayna Baszler, and Zoe Stark will be paid back tenfold for what they did to Dakota Kai. They shot that angle last week. Remember what I said? They shot that angle last week on the show. Dakota was supposed to have a singles match. She was in the back. She was on her way out. She gets ambushed and laid out. And they go after her knee. And it felt to me like she's really hurt, and this was their way of writing her off TV. I was hoping not. You know, she's coming off the beginning of the year, right? She came back from a torn ACL. So you see something like that. You look at someone like Tegan Knox, and it's like, oh boy, this woman can't catch a break. So we come to find out she is indeed injured. And it's not an ACL tear, but it was a torn meniscus. I don't know if they specified partially torn or fully torn. Seth Rollins, for example, had a partially torn earlier this year. He was out, but back in time for WrestleMania. But they said she's got a meniscus injury. She underwent surgery for it, and she is expected to be out anywhere from 8 to 10 weeks. So that is the update on Dakota Kai. And then there were two in damage control. After this, we got a promo from Sonya Deville, Shayna Baszler, and Zoe Stark. And in this promo, we learn the new name that this crew is now going by. They have a name, right? Damage Control is the name of the other group. Sonya's group, they need a name. We got to give them a name. We got to come up with a great name for this group. The great name that they came up for this group? The Pure Fusion Collective. The Pure Fusion Collective. Was Pure Garbage already taken by somebody else? Because I'm not sure that would be much worse than the Pure Fusion Collective. The fuck does that even mean? I have a razor in there that I shave with called Fusion. That's Pure Fusion. This, I don't know what this is. This is pure crap, is what this is. Who the hell came up with this name? What is going on with these names, by the way? Because as if this isn't bad enough, WrestleVotes, okay? WrestleVotes has a pretty good track record of these things. Earlier today, WrestleVotes posted a tweet about the Judgment Day. And WrestleVotes said, I want to make sure I get this right, plans are in motion to rebrand the Judgment Day, the new Judgment Day. Sources say a name change is likely. So again, this is not guaranteed. This is being discussed internally. A name change is likely. The leading candidate is an out-of-the-box yet bold idea. Okay, to rename the Judgment Day Street Trash. As in what Gunther called Damian Priest when they were feuding and called the rest of the members of the Judgment Day? Street Trash. Was dog shit taken by somebody else? What is with these names? What is going on here? The Pure Fusion Collective. Street Trash. The Bloodline, of course. I mean, the Bloodline, you don't got to worry about the Bloodline. They're well taken care of. You're not going to have a crappy name there. If you're in the Bloodline, believe me, you got it made. You don't got to worry about nothing. But if you're in the Pure Fusion Collective, I'd be very worried. Who's coming up with these names? You know, for as solid as the creative is right now in WWE, generally, right? It's not perfect, but like Monday Night Raw is much improved. SmackDown, lately SmackDown's hit or miss, but you know, the creative is pretty solid, okay, on many levels in WWE right now. There's a lot of long-term storytelling going on. As great as that is, on the flip side of things, when it comes to stuff like this, I'm not sure what's going on. This and the music in this company with Def Rebel, what the fuck is going on here? Changes. Changes need to be made. Something has to be done about this. Pure Fusion Collective. Yeah, Street Trash is worse, I will say. Street Trash would be worse. I hope they don't go with that. Unbelievable. Seriously, we should come up with a list of names that are better than that. I'm not sure dog shit really is that much worse. We got a graphic, no video, for the late Kevin Sullivan, who passed away last week. It's weird because on SmackDown Friday night, we got a video. Tonight, we got a graphic, unless I missed something, tonight we got a graphic. And what's weird is, you would think that if they were going to air a video, they would do it on the 3-hour show. Instead, they aired the video on the 2-hour show, and they did the graphic on the 3-hour show. That's just weird. The women's tag team champions, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, made their way out to get a ringside seat for the next match, which was Io Sky and Kairi Sane taking on Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. This was for a shot at the WWE Women's Tag Team titles. Io was in control, but a distraction from Sonya Deville put a stop to that. Zoe tried to superkick Io outside the ring, but she ducked. And guess who ate the superkick? Poor Alba Fire. Funny, too, because she got kicked in the face and basically knocked out, but was still sitting in the chair. She just kind of fell over. Like she got shot by a sniper's bullet. And all Alba Fire, poor Isla Dawn, could just sit there and caress her partner's head in her hands. Io had the match won after hitting her over the moonsault, but Isla Dawn and Alba, they ended up attacking for the disqualification. And the champions laid out Io and Kairi when the match was over. So technically, Damage Control won the match. But you knew with the DQ finish, there was going to be some fuckery afoot. And sure enough, they've already announced next week there's going to be a three-way match for the tag team titles with all three teams involved, even though Damage Control technically did win the match. This is, I would have said this about the Final Testicle and the New Day previously, but I'm actually getting into the New Day stuff. I have not been able to get behind this stuff. The one plus is that fans have responded to Damage Control in the last couple of weeks as babyfaces, because that's their role now. That's how they're being portrayed. There was never any proper term, but the fans have picked up on the fact that they're supposed to be the babyfaces here. But this is just, I can't get behind this. There's nothing here. And I, honestly, next week is going to be interesting, because we're going to see, I guess Sonya Deville probably won't be wrestling next week. It'll be Shayna and it'll be Zoe. But the last couple of times I've seen Shayna Baszler, Sonya Deville in the ring, she has not looked great. And I know that she was gone for a long time, and maybe she's just getting her legs back under her and getting acclimated again, but she's had a rocky start back in the ring. These last couple of times, these last few outings of hers have not been good. Especially the match with Lyra Valkyria, where Lyra was trying to deliver some kind of a, I don't know what the move was. It might have been a pump handle slam or something. She had to literally yell at Sonya, "Let go." Like she was holding on to her, "Let go." And then she finally let go. So the next time I see Sonya in the ring, I'm going to be very curious to see how she looks. Because she just has not looked all that great since coming back. Randy Orton made his way down to the ring for the next segment to address the audience, and he mentioned that it was 20 years ago this month that he won his very first World Heavyweight Championship from He Who Shall Not Be Named, and he became the youngest world champion of all time. He said the Bash in Berlin, he's going to win the title for the 15th time. Gunther interrupted and came to the ring, and Gunther said that Orton should be the greatest of all time. But Orton took his unlimited potential and he wasted it. Said he wanted him to understand this is a new era, and in this era there is no room for people who waste their potential. Orton said that, look, I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes. I've probably made more mistakes than everybody in that locker room, but I owned up to them. I changed course. He wanted to remind Gunther who he was talking to. He said he is the most unpredictable, violent, and controversial star in the history of the game. Because when I think controversial, I think Randy Orton. I know he has shit in a few bags in his day, but that was a long time ago. I don't exactly associate the word controversial with Randy Orton. Unpredictable, sure, because, you know, the RKO out of nowhere. I get that. That makes sense. Controversial? Would anybody in this chat consider Randy Orton to be controversial? Randy Orton really does feel like a new man compared to the way he was, you know, 15 years ago. Like, he really did mature. I think becoming a family man, he's got like five kids now, right? He's got mostly stepkids. But he's got a whole big family now. He's older, obviously. Yeah, you get older, you mellow out a little bit. He really does feel like a different person. But at no point, even prior to that, would I have referred to Randy Orton as controversial. So that was an interesting choice of words there. Orton mentioned his kids and his, quote, hot-ass smoke show wife. Said he thinks that he's done pretty damn well for himself. Gunther said that when it really matters, Orton always screws it up. He said that it comes natural to him because his grandfather was a screw-up, his father was a screw-up, and now Randy is the biggest screw-up of them all. And Randy wasn't smiling anymore. Now he was seething. Okay, now he went face-to-face, nose-to-nose here with Gunther. He was getting hot. When all of a sudden Drew McIntyre's music interrupted, he walked out down the aisle with a microphone in his hand and a smirk on his face. And Gunther turned to go leave, the ring. Orton spun him around and dropped him with an RKO. As that was happening, CM Punk came, I guess, from out of the crowd, and he attacked Drew McIntyre. He ambushed McIntyre, started hammering away on him. McIntyre, though, hit a Glasgow kiss, removed his belt from his pants. He went to go hit Punk with it. Punk avoided it. He got the belt. He began to whip McIntyre with it. He got McIntyre in the ring. Orton and Gunther were gone. I didn't even see where they went. They just sort of, I guess they pushed a button and the fucking, the mat opened up and they just got swallowed. And that was the end of Gunther and Randy Orton. So he whipped him until he exited the ring. Punk followed McIntyre outside, kept whipping him until McIntyre retreated into the crowd. Let's take this one step at a time. This is the second straight program now where Gunther has made this personal. He's made this personal with family insults. He has made this personal in the case of Damian Priest by mocking his upbringing and calling him street trash, which is a tremendous insult. It is not the name of a faction, but it's a great insult. And so here with Orton, he's insulting his grandfather. He's insulting his father. He's calling him a fuck up. He's saying wasted potential. That's your legacy. All these things to try to get under Orton's skin to get him triggered. And it worked here. So this is Gunther's MO now. He will find something about you, your family, your upbringing, and he will bring it up and he will throw it right back in your face, and he will do it with a smirk on his face because he's a prick. And he does it to get a rise out of people. As for Punk, he ended up being there after all after his travel problems. And him using the belt tells us what the stipulation is going to be for their next match. In the back, after this, Kathy Kelly caught up with CM Punk and said, you know, I saw you on my flight here to Austin. And Punk said, yes, we were on the same flight. He admitted that he told a little white lie because he figured that if he didn't, McIntyre might not have shown up. Punk said that Drew is walking around with a bracelet that has the names of his wife and dog on it. He said, it's not about the bracelet itself. He goes, hell, you can keep the bracelet. It's not even about the physical bracelet. He says that it's about the context, and it's about the names that are on it. Punk said McIntyre is not allowed to speak his wife or dog's name without consequences and repercussions. He said that it wouldn't stop until he gets his hands on him. He looked at his belt that he was still holding in his hand, actually Drew's belt, and said that he just figured out a way to keep everybody happy. The bracelet stuff, it goes back to SummerSlam. There was a lot of criticism from people online who thought that it was silly to build an entire match like that out of a 50-cent bracelet. The only issue I would say that I would have had with the match, and I didn't really have much of an issue with it, it's that I was maybe expecting more fire from both of them, especially Punk, considering how many months they've been tormenting each other. And maybe there just wasn't enough urgency and fire. I was expecting more of like a blood brawl. I don't mean literally having blood, but just like a blood brawl between the two. But the bracelet stuff didn't bother me. And as I explained that night in my review, it's what the bracelet represents. It has sentimental value for Punk. It's got the names of his wife and his dog on there. And, you know, whoever gave it to him or made it for him, a fan, I think, it's what it represents. And there were just people who could not wrap their mind around this concept. They just laughed and said, this is stupid. This is silly. It's a fucking bracelet. Who cares? But that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, right? They established over a period of weeks on television what that bracelet means to CM Punk. And now here he's saying, look, I'm not an idiot. It's not, you want to keep the bracelet, keep the bracelet. It's not about the bracelet itself. It's about what it represents, which is exactly the point that I was trying to convey to people who just didn't understand it at SummerSlam. They just think, oh, this is stupid. This is stupid. Not enough dives in the match. Less bracelets, more dives. Doesn't work that way. If you tell the story right, you could take anything. I could take this pen right here, okay? This pen probably is worth less than the bracelet. Maybe not, actually. It's a gel ink pen. G2, what up? But I could take this pen, and I could craft a great story about this pen. about how this pen was passed down from generation to generation in my family. My fucking grandfather took this pen to war with him. He's got war journals. He was in the Korean War, and he would write the journals out with this pen. This pen was soaked in blood at one point, and it was passed down from generation to generation to generation, and now it is here with me on YouTube every single week. I wave it around because this pen has meaning for me. Now, if somebody busted into this room right now, okay, if Joe Hendry busted into this room and stole this pen from me, I would want to kill him because this pen means something. You might look at it and go, it's a fucking pen. Who cares? It's what it represents. That's the concept that some people just could not wrap their head around. Hopefully now with this explanation from Punk tonight, they'll understand. But probably not. There are a lot of slow fans online. Take it from me. I've had the unfortunate, the misfortune of interacting with some of them over the last 24 hours. I don't think there's any getting through to some of these people. So basically, we are getting a strap match, probably in Berlin between these two. The match that Punk would have had with Ricky Starks at All Out had he not gotten himself fired. They were bound by that bracelet, and now they're going to be bound by the wrist. Going to get a strap match, and from the strap match, we will eventually get a Hell in a Cell match. That is how this feud is going to play. Backstage, Sheamus was interviewed by Jackie Redmond. Said that he doesn't understand why Pete Dunne has such a beef with him. He said Pete is trying to make himself off of his name. Ludwig Kaiser interrupted. Said he put Sheamus through a real banger last week. Said that it's far from over. And Dunn showed up and hit Sheamus from behind with a shillelagh multiple times. So we had Ludwig Kaiser warning Sheamus that this is not over yet. Remember what I said last week? Ludwig Kaiser, who's from Germany, I would be surprised if Triple H does not get him a spot on that card. We're getting Sheamus and Pete Dunn on Raw next week. I don't see a clean finish in that match. I think Kaiser gets involved, and I think we ultimately end up with a three-way match, probably in Berlin, with Sheamus, Dunn, and Kaiser as a way to get Kaiser on that show and probably get Kaiser a win. That's my early prediction here. We had Bronson Reed one-on-one with The Miz. They showed Mark Henry in the crowd with his son Jacob, who's going to be, I'm sure, is going to be a big star in WWE one day. And Mark got a great reaction, them being in Texas. Miz made a comeback after a commercial break, including a tornado DDT for a one count. It got him. Miz tried a springboard crossbody. Reed caught him, though, hit a Death Valley driver, and followed that with the tsunami splash and got the pin. After the match was over, Reed went for another one. Another tsunami, but R-Truth got into the ring and saved Miz. He rolled him out of harm's way. And so Bronson Reed did the only thing that really made sense here. He came off the top rope with basically what was a flying crossbody. And he took out R-Truth, who was standing up. Then he went up to the top. He delivered another tsunami. Here come officials and agents. Adam Pearce comes down to the ring. We get two more tsunamis before they finally drag Truth out of the way. But like a bunch of dumbasses, they dragged him from one corner to the other. So Bronson Reed climbs down. He walks across the apron to the opposite turnbuckle. He climbs up to the top and he delivers another tsunami splash. Roll him out of the ring. Just get him out of there. So he squashes him again. Adam Pearce is yelling at him. Finally, he goes to leave. But then Reed hits the ring one last time for one final tsunami. Last week, it was six tsunami splashes to Seth Rollins. This week, it was six tsunami splashes to R-Truth. Squashed in the middle of the ring like a bug. And as with Rollins, the crowd got louder and louder and louder each time he went up to the top to hit that splash. And like last week, I thought this was great. And guess what? Getting him more over. He'll probably do this again to another babyface next week or the week after that, and it's going to get over. This is how you get somebody over. It's working. It's also smart. to have him attack baby faces that the fans really like. Seth Rollins, right? One of the more popular baby faces on Monday Night Raw. R-Truth. Everybody loves R-Truth. The only thing is, listen to the crowd. When he's going up for the third, fourth, fifth one, sixth one, they're cheering him. They're getting louder each time. They're not booing him. There's little kids in the crowd are not crying, tears streaming down their face, like when the snake bit Macho Man on the arm, right? That one kid lives rent-free in my head. They zoomed in on him, and he had, his face was all scrunched up. He was crying. You don't see that. You see people cheering. He's probably chanting one more time. I don't know what that says about these fans, but the idea is smart. You take people that the fans love, and you have this guy go out there and kill them every single week. So look up and down the Raw roster and take your pick of who the next victim is going to be. Because there should be at least one more victim here. This is what they need to continue to do with him until Seth Rollins is ready to come back. Now, you're not going to necessarily do this every single week, but this is the sort of thing they need to do to keep him hot and to just put more heat on him and get him over. I hope Seth is not going to be gone for that many weeks. I hope it's not going to be a 2 or 3 month thing, but what they're doing with him is working. So keep doing it. But it is funny to me how the fans just, the fans don't care about these people. These fans, Daniel Bryan was right many years ago when he said that the fans are fickle. He really was. These people don't care about you. They don't. They'll cheer you and they'll do yeet. I guarantee you, if that was Jey Uso, if Bronson Reed did that shit to Jey Uso, people would cheer. You would have people in the crowd going one more time. I've always said the wrestling fans are the real heels here. Bronson Reed is not the heel. We are the heels. Speaking of Jey Uso, he was in the back getting Sami Zayn all hyped up for his main event match with Bron Breakker. Jey said that Sami would beat Bron and beat him again because it's 2 out of 3 falls. And the two of them would beat the Judgment Day to win the tag team titles, and Sami would end up being a double champion. And that brought us to our main event, Sami Zayn against Bron Breakker. 2 out of 3 falls for the Intercontinental Championship. The first fall came 6 minutes into the match and went to Sami Zayn, who caught Bron Breakker out of nowhere with a Huluva kick and pinned him. Oh no, he's buried! He's buried! Boy, those people from Money in the Bank are looking awfully fucking stupid right now, aren't they? How could they bury him? So now, Sami Zayn's up by 1. All he needs is 1 more win. If he wins 1 more fall, he will be a 5-time Intercontinental Champion. Breakker caught Sami on the outside. He was attempting to do a moonsault off the barricade, and he caught him. And he then proceeded to lawn dart this man into the timekeeper's area, into the wall, into the barricade, the back barricade, not the first one, over the barricade and into the other one. And the way they shot this, I love the camera shot that they got. It was like first person. So they had the cameraman right behind Bron. And as Bron was running towards the timekeeper's area, the camera followed. And it looked like he killed him. Like, it looked devastating. Because when he initially threw him, the camera got, like, all shaken up. But then when the camera focuses down, Sami is laying on the ground. It's not like he landed on a fucking crash pad. And I'm just like, man, what a fucking bump that was. But it looked great, just the way they filmed that whole thing, that whole sequence. So then they immediately cut to another commercial. Bron executed a gorilla press slam on the other side of the break. A gorilla press slam. He followed with a spear. And then he pulled down the straps. He hit a second spear. And then he pinned Sami to tie things up at 1 fall apiece. They went back outside to ringside. Breakker slammed Sammy's head on the announce desk. And then with Sami now seated, he was sitting on top of the desk. Bron went up to the apron. And he came flying off the apron with a flying clothesline, diving clothesline that took Sami. Actually, Bron went over the announce desk. Sami was still laying on the desk, but that's one of his signature spots now. Zane ended up beating the referee's count back in at the count of nine. Breaker sat Sammy on the top turnbuckle. He joined him up there. Zane fought back and hit a sunset bomb for a great near fall. Breaker ran the ropes for a spear. Sammy, though, caught him coming in with a kick and then fell on top of him for a near fall. Sammy went up top. Breaker joined him on the ropes, but Zane shoved him down. Sammy then jumped off the top rope, and Bron Breakker cut this man in half in midair with a spear. And that led to Bron getting the final three count to win the third and decisive fall. He goes up 2-1, and he retains the Intercontinental title. I don't know what Sammy was going for. He went for the flying nothing. We've never seen Sammy in the position that he was in when he jumped off the top rope. I don't know what he was going for, so that was a little ridiculous, but the spot itself looked great, and of course, Bron Breakker, to the surprise of no one, retains his Intercontinental title. Nobody believed that Sami Zayn was going to win the belt back. But what we got here, we got 17 minutes. Now remember, they got five at SummerSlam, 5.5. They got 17 minutes here, and it still felt like I could have watched this for another 5 minutes. Like, if they wanted to go 20+, like, that would have been perfect. But as it was, they gave them 17 minutes, and that's a hell of a lot more and a hell of a lot better than what we got a few weekends ago. That main event took this from a good show to a very good show. The main event, I think, made a big difference there, because there was a lot of good stuff on the show. The Bronson Reed segment was great. Everything else I'd say was good, or like average to good. The main event, though, was very good. And so that helped elevate the show a little bit. It also felt like this was the blow-off right here. Like, this is it. There's no need to get another match here between Bron Breakker and Sami Zayn. They have now had, technically, they've had five matches now. Two out of three falls tonight. So we got three matches tonight, technically, between them. Plus SummerSlam, plus Money in the Bank. That's it. Bron has established his dominance. He won the title. Sammy got his rematch. He got put down. Everybody looked great. Fans were into it. Sami Zayn did his job. Sami Zayn put over Bron Breakker. Bron is the future. We know that. Bron now can move on. He can defend his title against the next challenger, probably Ilya Dragunov. And Sami Zayn can go off with Jey Uso now to try to beat the Judgment Day to win the tag team titles. So this felt like the end for these two. And Sammy helped get him to where he needed to be. He did his job. That's really all you can ask for. You can't ask for a better person to work with than Sami Zayn. Bron himself said that a few weeks ago when he was interviewed. It's funny, though, by the way, to see Bron when he does interviews. He did an interview with Chris Van Vliet. But he's done a few of them. And it's funny. It's just funny how you could tell how anxious he is. He's so, like, timid and anxious, nervous. But, you know, when he's out there on television in front of millions of people, or he's in a building with 11,000 people, he's fine. And it's just the weirdest thing. And I don't know that he's an introvert, necessarily. I don't think it's necessarily an introvert thing. I just think it's just this weird thing. Brock Lesnar talked about that once when he was on the Stone Cold podcast many years ago. He doesn't like people. He doesn't like being around people. And he said, like, you can put me in a stadium with 50,000 people and I'm fine. But if you put me in an environment like this, right? Or if he was at a party, let's say, he would hate it. And he wouldn't know what to do with himself. Like, I'm watching Bron because he's new to this, right? Doing all this media and he's doing these interviews. He wouldn't even make eye contact with Chris. Like, he was looking down at his hands. But then you see him out here and he's like a killer, you know? It's just like a switch gets flipped. And he's like a totally different person. And I just think it's funny. But like I said, I enjoyed the show tonight. Last week was a better show overall. But Raw right now is rolling. And Raw is largely firing on all cylinders. And so I'm digging it. I'm liking it. I can't say the same for SmackDown. I hope they get back to where they were, you know, a month and a half ago. It's been very hit or miss with SmackDown lately. Some people don't like it when I say that. I had one person the other day, because I wasn't enamored by SmackDown, just stop watching. You're not a fan. You should just stop watching. Okay. I guess I'm not doing SmackDown reviews anymore because user 70994-4 thinks I'm not a fan. I shouldn't watch anymore. Now, the reality is SmackDown, we've seen SmackDown. when it's great. I know when SmackDown is great and when SmackDown is okay, but not at its peak of greatness. Hopefully they can get back there, because Raw has found a formula on Mondays that works. And it just makes the show that much more enjoyable to watch. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll, shall we? What did you think of Raw? From Austin, Texas, 73.7% say this was a thumbs up show. 19% thumbs in the middle, and 7.2% thumbs down. At Solomonster, what did you think of Raw? Go ahead and let me know. I want to hear from you guys. Yeah, The Rock. Yeah, I guess so. I guess we have to wait for the final boss to return. Maybe that's when things will start getting good again on SmackDown. Maybe we're all in final boss withdrawal. We need him to come back. No, they don't need Rock. It'll be nice to have a final boss back, but I think they can do it without him. They just got to get their shit together, that's all. What it boils down to. Thank you guys for the Super Chat support tonight. Let's take it back to the beginning here and kick this off with the real CS 02. Chiming in with a $4.99. I know you don't watch NXT much anymore, but who from TNA do you want or expect to show up next? For me, I hope it is Josh Alexander. Josh would be cool. Josh is a great wrestler. Josh has a contract that is coming due early next year. It's a bunch of TNA talents. Jordan Grace also. January, February 2025. And Alexander, I expect Alexander to probably bounce and would not be surprised if he signs with NXT. Because if you remember, when his contract came due earlier this year, he was hoping to hit the free agent market. And TNA had the option on him, and they rolled it over for another year. So my guess is he's going to be out of there, and feeling what interest there might be for him. I wouldn't mind seeing him in NXT. I don't know that we're going to see Moose, but maybe Moose. You know, maybe that's a possibility. Beyond that, I don't know, but I'm sure we're going to get more Joe Hendry. Lakers, Pats. What is seen as favorite food? Seafood. Get it? Lakers, Pats, you should be ashamed of yourself. It's awful. Not quite as awful as the Pure Fusion Collective. But that's pretty bad. My cock hurts says, Solomonster, do you know if Isla Dawn is single? I do not know if Isla Dawn is single at the moment. I don't know what her relationship status is. I do know that she used to date Malakai Black many years ago. And possibly, was it Elton Prince, the blonde one from Pretty Deadly? Who she may or may not be dating now, I don't know. I'm not in the business of knowing who Isla Dawn is dating. Maybe that's why his cock hurts, because he's waiting for Isla Dawn to become available. You may be waiting for a while. Bobbert Reviews, with just the greatest timing ever, I think, on a Super Chat that I have ever seen, literally kicked things off here on tonight's stream with a $150 Super Chat bomb, and brother, no message. He just wanted to show his love and show his appreciation, I guess, for Joe Hendry. So, thank you again. This journey called life. Got to meet Joe Hendry at the meet and greet yesterday in Queens. He was awesome and complimented my outfit. Definitely a class act. Yeah, you know, I don't hear any negative stories about him when it comes to fan interactions. I'm looking forward to having him for the House of Glory show at the end of next month. And that'll be my first time meeting him. But I've heard nothing but positive stories about him. Donnie Yasu with the 23. Did my ears deceive me? Final Testament got reactions tonight. So did the Creeds and Zoe Stark. Seems Triple H's philosophy of being on TV regularly will get you over is working. Well, the final testament got, they got a reaction, but, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say it was anything overwhelming, like overwhelming heat or anything like that. But the one thing I will say is they are getting consistent television now. And you need to get consistent television to get over. So if their goal is to get them over as these mega heels, that's the way to do it. Whether or not it succeeds or not, we'll see. But, you know, they may be starting to bear some fruit with that philosophy when it comes to them. Hisco95, I believe in the monster. What are your thoughts on current NXT? Do you like what Shawn Michaels is presenting, or do you prefer the NXT run by Triple H? I prefer the NXT run by Triple H, but, you know, what I see of NXT now, it's fine. You know, it's just, it's a show for a slightly different audience than what the previous incarnation of NXT was appealing to. There are parts of the show that I enjoy. There are other parts of the show when I catch it, which is not every week, that I just immediately flip off from. I'm not a top to bottom, oh my God, NXT is great guy. It's very hit or miss, but it's the developmental show, right? I mean, yes, it is a third brand. Yes, they are going to go to broadcast TV, you know, in 2 months. But it is still developmental at the end of the day. So you're going to have things that they're trying that may or may not work, gimmicks that they are trying that may or may not work. It's one thing I appreciate about what Shawn Michaels does, but I don't go gaga for NXT the way some people do. Jerome Eugenio. Is the Final Testament and New Day story the slowest moving storyline in the history of the world? It might be. It feels like. Hopefully now it's starting to get good. David Thiering with the $50 super chat. Where does Pure Fusion Collective rank on your list of worst WWE faction names? The name does not feel right to me. Well, there's a reason for that. It sucks. I'm trying to debate if it's worse than the Core. Remember the Core with like the remnants of the Nexus? The Core with two R's? I mean, that was pretty bad too. Funniest YouTube name. Aldis Dick and Balls, My Cock Hurts, or the many names of Demeter Bullion. Now, Demeter Bullion, it's not a matter of like names with him. It's just inane rambling nonsense on TNT on Tuesday nights. But I look, shout out to both those guys, but I'm still partial to my boy. I don't know where he is, but I smoke a lot of weed. That will be an all-time classic moment in the history of these streams. My brain just didn't put it together at first when I saw it. I thought it was like someone, you know, naming himself after some new brew from Dunkin' Donuts. Like, iced mocha. Like, it took 7 seconds for my brain to process what I was seeing. Which tells you what, yeah, it says a lot about me as far as, like, I don't know from that stuff. So, like, I was a little slower than most figuring it out. But once I did, I just lost it. Like, it broke me. It broke me. For like 5 minutes straight. Justin G. Liv makes unseasoned tendies. No salt or paprika. You know what you need with your chicken tenders? You need honey mustard. It's so good. Jarrett Rodriguez. What the hell is a Pure Fusion Collective? I don't know. What was the Nightmare Collective? Remember the Nightmare Collective? From AEW, how successful that was. I'm still wondering what the hell that was supposed to be. WWE Wrestling and Gaming. If Orton takes the title from Cody of Bad Blood, when does Cody get it back? I'll tell you what, I would not mind taking it all the way to WrestleMania and having him win it back at WrestleMania. If they're going to do Rock and Cody, it becomes impossible to do that. then I would say he has to win it back at the Royal Rumble. But if they're going to do Rock and Roman and come back maybe to Cody and Rock at some other time, you can do Rock and Roman in Vegas, and you can do Cody and Randy. You know, the final match, and have Cody win the belt back there. You know, that gives Randy a solid, would that be 6 months? Maybe about 6 months, maybe with the championship, 5 or 6 months. Prince Vegeta, 95. Your thoughts on the Hardys coming back to WWE? Honestly, I could care less. Jeff Hardy has gotten far too many chances, and I don't need to see him beating NXT champions in 5 minutes on TV again. Well, right now it's only a rumor. They had a meeting in Cleveland over SummerSlam weekend. We don't know what it was about. We don't know that they're coming back to WWE. They probably will. I can't bring myself to care. You know, if they want to come back and have one last run, WWE knows what they're getting themselves into. So that's their choice to make. Obviously, there is a future Hardys Hall of Fame induction. There's merchandising and marketing opportunities with them. I just don't have any interest in seeing them in the ring at all. I just don't. And whether or not it's WWE or AEW or TNA, it's just, I really just can't bring myself to care one way or the other. WWE Wrestling and Gaming, buy or sell, MJF against Will Ospreay from last month. Yes, it's the only match they've had, so. And Cena versus Punk, Money in the Bank. Cena versus Punk at Money in the Bank, for me, is an all-timer. So I'm going to buy on that. If you listen to the show that I did on Sunday, though, in the mailbag, I got a question asking me basically a buy or sell question. MJF Ospreay from Dynamite, their hour-long match, or Shawn Michaels and John Cena in the UK on Raw in their hour-long match. About 55 minutes. And I bought on MJF and Will Ospreay. I thought that it was the better match. I thought it was more of a fun match. So of those two, I would buy an MJF and Ospreay. With these two, I go Cena Punk. It was just magical. It was the right match at the right time in front of the right crowd. All the stars aligned, all the circumstances came together, and it just made for an all-time great match. Brandon Proctor with the $12. Hello, brother. Happy for Bronson Reed finally getting a well-deserved push. Looking forward to seeing many more tsunami splashes. You and I both. See, this is the Bronson Reed that beat Kazuchika Okada in New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's good to see him back. Manuel Macias, what's Ethan Page's ceiling on the main roster, do you think? I think his ceiling is probably at the IC or US title level. And I'm not saying that like, oh, he can never be a world champion, right? He's not good enough to be a world champion. Do I see him becoming a world champion on the main roster? I don't. And I think the IC or US is probably going to be his ceiling there. Assuming he makes the main roster, right? We don't know for a fact that he will. He probably will at some point. I don't see him going higher than that. I just think there's too much competition at the top, too many other stars that are better than him competing for that spot, and I just don't see it. Prince Vegeta, I don't know who would want to join up with Chad Gable. He's talented, but he's got the track record of Goldberg or Colin Delaney. Well, at least the Creeds won tonight. My theory is that the Creeds won because he wasn't there. He's like a bad luck charm. He was in France, so therefore the Creeds won. El Masse with the $25 Brimo. Man, I didn't even hear it. You think Triple H is crazy enough to have Damian and Rhea challenge Balor and JD for the tag team titles? That's interesting. That is interesting, unless Sammy and Jay win the titles from them. I'd be down for that. I'd be down for doing that match. Prince Vegeta, don't know why people would want to join up with Chad Gable. Oh, it came in twice. See? Look at this. How about that? Hey, Prince Vegeta, I don't know if you meant to do that, but thank you, brother. I hope I answered your question. Luis, our boy Luis, Belmont Show, walkthroughs with a $5 super chat. Dirty Dom and Liv Morgan need to stop punishing Southern California, especially Los Angeles, with their Judgment Day earthquakes. I heard there was a 4.4 on the Richter scale today, I believe. You live in California, brother, you're going to get earthquakes. You kind of have to accept that when you choose to live in California. Marquand, 1976, buy or sell, better Batista I quit moment, 2010 or 2014? Well, the one in 2010, he was in a wheelchair, right? And he was screaming, I quit. And then in 2014, I think it was more just like the little wave that he did. I prefer the 2010 one myself. I thought that was funnier. Oofman Entertainment, Pure Fusion Collective. Who came up with this? Bruce. I don't know who, but whoever it was should no longer be in charge of coming up with names for future factions. And if it was the talent, then they have to take that decision out of the talent's hands. Justin G. Pure Strikers. Better than Pure Fusion Collective. No, I don't think that's honestly that much better. Retro KOH. Gold, Silver, Bronze. Pure Fusion Collective, Viking Experience, and Street Trash. Look, I mean, Street Trash, I cannot imagine that they ultimately decide to go with that name. It's just so horrible. So I'm going to give the gold of awful names to Street Trash. But just saying it is so ridiculous. I live in New York, so I see it all over the place. I never thought to myself as I'm looking down at garbage in the street, hey, you know what? That would be a great name for a fucking faction. I give that the gold. I give Pure Fusion Collective the silver, and I give the Viking Experience the bronze. That's the least offensive of those three. The Learning Sicko, Dr. Bropio. Street Trash is just PG for prostitutes. Well, hey, just go all the way and call themselves that if that's what they want to be. Smoking dried chicken without flavor. Damage control is like a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. EO is the eggs, Kyrie is the bacon, and Dakota is the cheese. And Asuka is a bread. Well, I'm a bacon guy. So I guess I'll have me some Kyrie. And you guys can fight over the eggs and the cheese. The Juliet. Funny how some went from wanting Orton to RKO Rhea to wanting Rhea to do a riptide to Dom Dom. Well, hey, equal opportunity, man. It's only fair. Devin from New Jersey, gold, silver, bronze, Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian. I give the gold to Edge and Christian. I was always an Edge and Christian fan over the other two, so I will go gold for ENC, silver for the Dudleys, and bronze for the Hardys. Smoking dried chicken, let's all just get it out of our system, everybody. Hashtag Lexi Nair or hashtag Kathy Kelly. I'm going hashtag Kathy Kelly. I love Kathy. Justin G, Winged Eagle, the pen, or the Rounded Eagle, gold, silver, bronze. Well, I mean, come on now. Gold to the Winged Eagle, silver to the Rounded Eagle, and the pen can go fuck off. Sorry, Grandpappy. Smoking dried chicken without... Man, this pen has seen some shit. Let me tell you. This pen has seen some shit. If I tell you the war stories that this pen... If this pen could talk, if I drew a little face on this pen, the stories this pen would tell you, you wouldn't believe. Smoking dried chicken without flavor. This dried chicken has a message to Austin, Texas. The Texas Longhorns suck. And let's go Oklahoma Sooners. There you go. Two teams that I could not care less about. Also, Braun versus Braun versus Brunson. LeBron as the ring enforcer. You forgot about Bronson Reed. What about him? They'll just squash them all, right? Tsunamis to all of them. Jeremy Rose, rank future success over 10 years, Gunther Braun Mello. So you're talking future success. I mean, Gunther, it's hard to answer that because Gunther has already had such great success as the IC champion. Now he's the world champion. So how do I not put him in the number one spot? Braun is going to be right there behind him. And then Mello, I put dead last. Hoffenheim, for me, Rock has the same feeling like LeBron. I want to see them retire. Funny, that's how I feel about Jericho. Jeremy Rose, with all this rumored talent coming from AEW and TNA, how is WWE going to get everybody time? Who are they going to lose to make time for these people? Well, first of all, nobody has come over. These are all just rumors right now. The Lucha Bros are probably going to end up in WWE. The Motor City Machine Guns, they may end up in WWE. Ricky Starks, I am sure, is going to end up in WWE. Daniel Garcia, we don't know yet what he's going to do. Most of the names I just mentioned, if not all of them, are going to first hit NXT. So the advantage that WWE has is they don't have to flood the main roster with these people. They can sign whoever they want, and they can store them away. It's like storing food away for the winter. And when they're good and ready, and they have a spot, they can call them up selectively, one by one. So it's not as much of an issue as I would say, like with Tony Khan, who has Dynamite and he has Collision. I'm not even going to mention Rampage. And he's got to find time to juggle all of these people that he has under contract, and most of them we never see. Right? We don't see them consistently. It's a little bit easier for WWE because they have the PC, they have NXT, they have that third brand where they can send people there, have them work with the younger, less experienced guys, and build up that brand, which is now going to broadcast television, and they're going to have to put their best foot forward with NXT. They're going to need stars on that show. So them bringing these people in from AEW, if they're going to put them all in NXT and just build up NXT, like you want to see these guys, you got to tune into NXT. It's actually smart. But even WWE, you do reach a point where it's like, all right, you got to stop signing all these people. We know from, you know, past experience that WWE does not mind letting people go. They will always have waves of people that are not being used that will simply fall off and they will let go. They don't hoard people and just hold on to all of them. They have no issue firing you and getting rid of you. We've seen that many times before, even since Triple H has taken over. So I don't think it's going to be as much of an issue for them. Smoking dry chicken. MJF and Britt Baker needs ice cream, cookies, and candy. Sometimes you need some sweets to calm your nerves. Yeah, or just, you know, stay the fuck away from each other. Wouldn't that be the easiest thing? Ryan Hood, plot twist. Punk steals Drew's sword, Angela, as he did Taker's urn. What do you think? Love the stream. Thanks. The sword is old news, brother. The sword was a Vince McMahon thing. Yeah, every now and then, maybe Drew does an entrance with the sword, but the sword is a thing of the past. I don't want to see them bring that back. Now we're going to be going back and forth with inanimate objects. I don't want to see that. Ryan, though, thank you. So you got the emoji there. I'm hoping that you were just joking. We don't need Angela back on TV. Chris Mikesell with a $9.99. My son officially likes wrestling. I showed him the first TLC match and Mankind's first title win. Any Rock matches that you would recommend? He was asking since he knows him from Hollywood. Thanks and much love. Show him Rock and Hogan from WrestleMania 18. I think he'll enjoy it. Rock, Hogan, I would say, I don't know if he likes long matches, so maybe stay away from the Iron Man match with Triple H. But you can't go wrong with Rock and Triple H from Backlash 2000. I'm trying to think of matches where there was like a big fun moment or finish. So I think of Backlash. I think of Mania 18. Something more contemporary? Probably not. I would stick to that time period for The Rock. It's probably best. Gold Matthew just saw Brett versus Undertaker with Shawn Michaels, special guest ref, for the first time. Thought it was better than the SummerSlam match with the special guest ref. I assume you're talking about the Punk and McIntyre. Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. SummerSlam 97 was much better. What is the best special guest referee match? It may be that one. It may be that one, honestly. Hoffenheim, shout out to a fellow Swiss in Oro Mensa from NXT. We went to the same school. That's very cool. He's part of the Metaphor. At least the last time I paid attention to whatever he was doing, he was part of the Metaphor. Is Noam Dar still out injured? Smoking dried chicken, Mariah May needs to order some cake pie, frosting, and whipped cream. An evil idea. PTSD for Timeless Tony. Now she just has to throw a pie in her face, and it'll take her back to those awful WWE days. Oofman says, now I want to hear the pen stories. Only if the pen decides to write a book one day. It's got plenty of stories to tell. This journey called life, I got even more respect for Priest after his documentary. Yeah, how was that documentary? The Damian Priest documentary. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. But usually those WWE 24 docs are very good. Oh, how could I forget? Thank you for reminding me. Steve Austin and Dude Love had Vince McMahon as a special guest ref at Over the Edge 98. It's one of my all-time favorite matches. You know what? I think I might go with that one. Yeah. I blanked on that one for some reason. Maybe it was Vince. Maybe I blocked Vince out of my mind so much now that anything like that with him, I just forgot. Maybe. I try to think about him as little as possible these days. In terms of a special guest referee, though, I probably would go with Over the Edge 98. Austin and Dude Love, and then after that, maybe Bret and Undertaker from SummerSlam in 97. Hoffenheim, we need a little bit of chocolate since Kayla left. You got Samantha Irvin. What's the problem here? I don't see what the problem is. Smoking Dried Chicken TNA is knocking on Private Party's door. Samuel Hayworth with the $6. Should Solo bring in Eric Bischoff as his wise man for the Civil War just for the shoot promos with Heyman? No. I have no interest in seeing... I have about as much interest at this point in seeing Bischoff on TV as I do Shane McMahon. Raph, I have a 100-year-old drafting pencil from my grandpa. Yeah, well, I'll take my pen and put that up against your pencil. And pen will win every time. Jeremy Rose, any plans to go to a PLE anytime soon? No plans. Nothing on the schedule. Brandon Vasquez, your pen, just like CM Punk's bracelet, is street trash. What a terrible thing to say. It's horribly offensive. Jarrett Rodriguez with a $9.99. Jarrett, thank you, man. His second, I believe. Second or third Super Chat of the night. If WWE offered a position in the company for a dude that just goes around smacking people in the audience that participate in the unnecessary what chants, I would be first in line. Brother, I would give up the show just to do that job. I'd put on my Blackjack Mulligan glove and I would happily go around smacking people in the face. Smoking Dried Chicken, The Pen versus the Coffee Cup, McAfee on commentary. This is not coffee, by the way, just so you know. I don't drink coffee. Coffee is disgusting. I don't know how you people drink that shit. It's a coffee mug. Spiffy sound off mug, by the way, which you can buy. You go to thesolemonster.com, cheap plug, go to the bottom, you'll see the link, get mugged. You can get one of your own. It's got, the cool thing about it is the logo is on both sides. Beautiful logo. Thank you guys for all of the super chat love. I do appreciate it. We are currently sitting at 472 likes. We are like less than 30 likes away from 500. So can you get me to 500? Can we do 500 before we end the live stream tonight? I think that's easy enough to do. I think so. Don't you? What do you think, Alex Marvez?
Ah!
Yeah. Get back in your cage. It's time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Oh, look at Dominic Mysterio. Look at him. Look at him in his little rat face. Luckiest bastard in the world here. Dominic Mysterio and Liv Morgan. A love story as old as time. Time to be the booker, and we will begin, as we always do, with the tag team matches. That is what we will do. And we're going to kick things off with Tyson Kidd. And I guess at the time they were calling him D.H. Smith. Davey Boy Smith Jr. I'll tell you what I'm surprised by. I'm surprised he never got a proper run, like a singles run in WWE. Given his family history, given his pedigree and his size, I'm surprised he never got a run in that company. But he did have a tag team run for a time with Tyson Kidd. There's Natty. God, what year would that be from? Is that like 2010? That was a long time ago. That was a long time ago. The Hart Dynasty. Going to be taking on the Outsiders, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. The Hart Dynasty and the Outsiders. Would have been an interesting tag team title feud. Scott Hall, man. Scott Hall working with TJ Wilson. Oof. That would have been good. That would have been good. As great as he worked with Sean Waltman, I think he and TJ, man, they would have had some fire matches together. Women's Be the Booker. A reluctant bell, says Justin G. A bell is a bell. I gave it the bell. All right, here we go. We begin. Well, there she is again. Melina Perez. Melina is back. Doing the splits. Always happy to see. She's very flexible. Yeah, it's funny. We just saw Natty in that previous image. The only Melina match that really... Well, there's two of them, I guess. I was going to say the only Melina match that stands out to me. One of them being the greatest match of all time, according to Cameron. The greatest women's match of all time, Melina against Alicia Fox. But the other Melina match that stands out to me, the only one, was the match that she had. I want to say it was at a Royal Rumble, but I could be wrong, with Natty. And Natty put her in the sharpshooter. And because Melina is so damn flexible, she bent as far back as I have ever seen somebody get bent back in a sharpshooter where I was in pain. But it looked fantastic. I mean, you talk about a fucking painful-looking submission. Because she was so damn flexible. She could bend all the way. I still remember that. It's the only Melina match I could tell you anything about. That's the only one that stands out to me. Maybe we could change that here and be the booker. Let's see. Let's see who she's going to be getting into the ring with here. It's going to be Melina. One-on-one with Zoe Stark. Not even sure that match would make main event. That's a no for me. Which means, much like Bron Breakker and Sami Zayn earlier tonight, we are all tied up at one. And we need a tiebreaker. This is going to be the tiebreaker here. Are you ready? Let me crack my knuckles first. There you go. Not the best, but here we go. Here we go. Woo! We kick things off with the Nature Boy. The 16-time world champion, Ric Flair, in the main event of Be the Booker. We have Ric Flair, who, it has been said, could wrestle a broom. Let's see what broom he's going to be wrestling tonight. Ric Flair, one-on-one with Roderick Strong in his trademark neck brace. Ric Flair and Roddy as a wrestling match. Hey, in Flair's prime. Prime Flair against Roddy of today would have been a hell of a wrestling match. That's a hell of a wrestling match. There you go, man. That's a fresh one, too. We've never booked that match before, so that's one of the things I like about it. Ah! Alex, you're too much. Alex Marvez. What do we have here before we get out of here? We have got a few more super chats left here. Gold Matthew with another $5. Rank these revenue streams in terms of importance. Gate, merch, pay-per-view sales, TV deal. Also, why are pay-per-view sales never talked about for the Monday Night War? They were talked about a lot at the time. You just had to be around for it. They don't get talked about as much now. They were talked about at the time. They were reported. I used to read about it all the time. I mean, as far as revenue streams, if we're talking today in the modern day, it's an impossible question to answer because for WWE, pay-per-view sales are barely a blip anymore. They don't mean anything. First of all, the TV deal is number one. For WWE and AEW, the TV deal, the TV money, is number one. It is the number one revenue stream for them. That is where they make their money. It's guaranteed money. WWE has escalators built into these deals. So each year of the deal, they get more money and more money and more money. They're getting $5 billion from Netflix alone. They got $1 billion from Fox. And Tony Khan is working on what he himself is calling the most important deal in the history of AEW because that TV money is money that he needs. That TV money will guarantee the health and safety of his company for years to come. So TV is absolutely number one. And then I would say number two, gate is important. Gate is important. But merch, you know, I'm going to say gate number two, but merch money is very important too. But I'll say TV, gate, and merch is how I would rank them. Pay-per-view sales are more important for AEW, less so for WWE. That's what I mean. Like, it's impossible to answer just kind of universally because it's just different based on promotion. But, I mean, it used to be, many years ago, it used to be, you know, selling tickets. It was all about how many tickets did you sell? You know, what was the gate on the house? And then pay-per-view became the big kind of barometer of, all right, how many buys did this show get? I remember when the Invasion pay-per-view took place in July of 01. That, up to that point, was the biggest non-WrestleMania pay-per-view number in the history of the company. I think for that show, they did like 875,000 buys, I think. The biggest pay-per-view buy rate that WCW ever did was for that Starrcade 97 show with Sting and Hogan. And I think it was only 675,000, maybe seven. Maybe they touched 700. And that was the biggest number they ever did. Fast forward many years, that first Rock Cena match did well north of a million. And I think the second one did maybe a little bit more. I know in 07, the Battle of the Billionaires, WrestleMania, that one up to that point was the biggest number. But now pay-per-view is, you know, it doesn't mean anything in WWE anymore. Samuel Hayworth, funniest special guest referee was Rock as the referee for Bulldog and Triple H. I think that was the one where we got the sliding people's elbow at the end. Smoking Dried Chicken says, one day on Raw, Liv and Dom will log. Oh, will fog. I thought it said log. Rhea and Dom, or Liv and Dom, not Rhea. Liv and Dom will fog up the rental car, and it's going to have a smelly odor. Well, I hope they don't destroy the rental car, because CM Punk will not be very happy about that. That's what he told Jack Perry. Can't destroy the rental car. You're going to ruin it for the boys. Melina Perez against Zoe Stark. Jason Voorhees is the special guest referee. Sure, why not? Nick Grasso. Solo Sikoa's new wise man should be Armando Estrada with his cigars. Not only did he manage Umaga, but he also managed Jacob Fatu for a little while. Armando Estrada as Solo's wise man. I don't know that Solo needs a wise man, but you know, that could be a fun way to get him back on TV. He was a good character. Smoking Dried Chicken. I wonder what John Moxley's thoughts are on Kevin Dunn leaving WWE. John Moxley doesn't even think about Kevin Dunn anymore. By the way, there's a super chat for that now. It's in the description down below. You almost got me, but you're not getting it for free. And Eminem with the $2. Do you see Orton and Cody at Bad Blood? Yes, I do. Randy Orton and Cody Rhodes, I think, is going to be the Bad Blood match. If it is, it will be the first. It will not be the last. That is how I see that playing out. Thank you for the questions. Thank you for all the new channel memberships as well. Silver Tower, I just love how he popped in earlier very casually and just dropped 10 gifted memberships like a boss. Because that's what he does. Paul Carpenter has been a channel member for 16 months. Dominic Mysterio eats chicken tenders the long way. How do you know this? Is that a guess, or do you have knowledge of something that we don't? Austin, yes, thank you. We always have a good time, even when there's a bad show. And tonight was not a bad show. But even when we have a bad show on TV, we always have a good night with Be the Booker. The next time I am live with you guys will be Wednesday night after AEW Dynamite. And then, of course, Friday night after SmackDown. I think Roman Reigns is back on the show again this week, I believe. So I hope you guys will be back with me live for that. And, of course, if you missed episode 874 of The Sound Off, almost 2 hours long of audio goodness, go check that out. It went up Sunday afternoon for your listening pleasure. You'll find me over on JD's channel tomorrow night, Tuesday Night Titans, 8:30 Eastern Time. So I'm all over the place this week. Be well, stay safe. I will see you guys back here on Wednesday night for the Dynamite recap. Take care, guys.